ఓం శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరిః ఓం. గణానాం త్వా గణపతిగుం హవామహే కవిం కవీనాముపమశ్రవస్తమం జ్యేష్ఠరాజం బ్రహ్మణాం బ్రహ్మణస్పత ఆనశృణ్వన్నోతిభిః సీద సాదనం శ్రీమహాగణాధిపతయే నమః. సదాశివసమారంభాం శంకరాచార్యమధ్యమాం అస్మదాచార్యపర్యంతాం వందే గురు పరంపరాం. నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్. ఆత్మస్వరూప బంధుగణ, సో ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ క్లాస్ ఆన్ వర్డ్స్ ఐ విల్ బి టీచింగ్ ఎ ఫ్యూ వెర్సెస్ ఫ్రమ్ ద సెకండ్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ భగవద్గీత. దోస్ వెర్సెస్ ఆర్ there with you in that booklet, together with the transliteration and also translation. These verses are very popular to the students of Gita. They are called Sthita Prajna Lakshanas, the defining characteristics of Sthita Prajna. Sthita Prajna is a very heavy, a very poignant Sanskrit word. Sthita prajnayasya saha. So one who has a steady understanding is called sthita prajna. Prajna is understanding, a vision. And sthita is steady, abiding understanding. You see, everybody understands dharma, the righteousness. Everybody knows it. But just knowing it is not enough. It has to become an integral part of the personality. Only then that person is called a dharmika, a righteous person. It is like, suppose we have to say a person is truthful. Suppose he speaks the truth for one day, would you say him truthful? No. Suppose he speaks the truth for 1 week or 1 month, then also you would not call him a truthful person. Even if he speaks the truth for 1 year, then also we don't call him a truthful person. If a person speaks truth for 10 years or 15 years, then we will say he is a truthful person. So one should speak truth. This much basic principle is known to everybody. But people, at the earliest occasion, they speak the untruth. So that means the prajna, knowledge is there, but the steadiness, the steadfastness is not there. So, in the context of Gita, the knowledge is knowledge of the self, self-knowledge. Very interestingly, we think that we know the world around us, but that understanding is not right. We assume like that. What we know about the world around us is all false. We have to investigate it and find out. Till you do that, you assume that you know about the world around you. Similarly, I may think that I know all about myself. This is again not correct. It looks like that. Without investigation, people assume that they know about themselves. Again, that is wrong. Similarly, people worship Ishvara, the God. And you see, suppose I am worshipping the God means what? I must have known something about the God. Without that, how I can worship the God? So, it is understood, it is assumed that I know God because I am worshipping God. But again, our understanding of God is faulty, is either incomplete or faulty, or both. So, here when we talk of knowledge, it is the knowledge of these three. Knowledge of the world around us in which we are living, knowledge of oneself, the person, and knowledge of Ishvara. These three areas are in dark in our life, and all our suffering in life, the disorder, or a tumult, whatever there is there in life, is due to the ignorance in these three areas. సో యూ కెన్ ఫోకస్ ఆర్ హైలైట్ ది సెల్ఫ్ ఫర్ ది ప్రెసెంట్ డిస్కషన్. థో ఐ సెడ్ త్రీ, ద త్రీ వెర్టిసీస్ ఆఫ్ ఎ ట్రయాంగిల్. రియల్లీ ఇన్ వేదాంత వీ డిస్కస్ దీస్ త్రీ థింగ్స్. దీస్ ఆర్ ది త్రీ మెయిన్ థింగ్స్ దట్ కాన్స్టిట్యూట్ ది సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్ ఆఫ్ వేదాంత, నేమ్లీ ద ఇండివిజువల్, ది వరల్డ్ ఇన్ విచ్ హీ లివ్స్, అండ్ ది గాడ్ హూ ఇస్ ది కాజ్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ అండ్ ది ఇండివిజువల్. సో దీస్ ఆర్ ది త్రీ పాయింట్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ డిస్కస్డ్ ఇన్ వేదాంత. బట్ ఇన్ ది కాంటెక్స్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది సెకండ్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ గీత, ది మెయిన్ ది నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ ది సెల్ఫ్, ది ట్రూత్ అబౌట్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్ ఈజ్ హైలైటెడ్ అండ్ సో ఇన్ దిస్ కాంటెక్స్ట్ స్థిత ప్రజ్ఞ ఇన్ దేర్ ఇఫ్ ఎ పర్సన్ హీ నోస్ అబౌట్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ దట్ మీన్స్ హీ హ్యాస్ ది సెల్ఫ్ నాలెడ్జ్ దట్ ఈజ్ ఆత్మ జ్ఞానం అండ్ ఆల్సో హీ అబైడ్స్ ఇన్ ఇట్ దెన్ హీఈస్ కాల్డ్ స్థిత ప్రజ్ఞ దట్ మీన్స్ హీ కెన్ సే ఇట్ ఈజ్ మై నాలెడ్జ్ హీ కెన్ సే దట్ హీ నోస్ ఇట్ యాజ్ సంథింగ్ వెరీ ఇంట్రెన్సిక్ టు హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ దట్ వై హీ నోస్ ఇట్ బికాస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ నాలెడ్జ్ అబౌట్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఓన్లీ సో సచ్ అ నాలెడ్జ్ ఈజ్ కాల్డ్ స్థిత ప్రజ్ఞ స్థిత ప్రజ్ఞ మీన్స్ ఎన్ అబైడింగ్ నాలెడ్జ్ అండ్ ది పర్సన్ హూ హ్యాజ్ ఇట్ ఈజ్ కాల్డ్ స్థిత ప్రజ్ఞ సో సచ్ ఎ పర్సన్ వీ కెన్ సచ్ ఎ పర్సన్ ఈజ్ రిఫర్డ్ టు ఇన్ వేరియస్ వేస్ దే కాల్ హిమ్ ఎ జ్ఞాని ఎన్ ఎన్లైటన్డ్ పర్సన్ ఎ సెయింట్ దట్ ఈస్ హౌ ఆల్సో దే కాల్ హిమ్ హీఈస్ కాల్డ్ ఎ జ్ఞాని ఫ్రమ్ ది పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ వ్యూ ఆఫ్ హిస్ విషన్ అండ్ హీఈస్ కాల్డ్ ఎ సెయింట్ ఫ్రమ్ ది పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ వ్యూ ఆఫ్ హిస్ ఇంటరాక్షన్ విత్ ది వరల్డ్ అరౌండ్ హిమ్ సో ఎ రియలైజ్డ్ సోల్ సమ్ టైమ్స్ హీఈస్ రిఫర్డ్ టు లైక్ దట్ ఎన్ ఎన్లైటన్డ్ పర్సన్ లైక్ దట్ దే సే సో వీ సింప్లీ కాల్ హిమ్ ఎ జ్ఞాని అండ్ దిస్ జ్ఞాని ఈజ్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ ఇన్ గీతా హియర్ యు సీ బిఫోర్ గోయింగ్ ఇన్ టు ద డిస్క్రిప్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది జ్ఞాని ఇన్ ది వెర్సెస్ దట్ ఫాలో ఐ వుడ్ లైక్ టు సే సంథింగ్ అబౌట్ గీతా ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ సీ భగవద్గీత ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఆఫెన్ టేకన్ టు బి ఎ రిలీజియస్ స్క్రిప్చర్ which is not the correct way of looking at Gita. It is not a religious scriptures, a scripture. There may be some elements of religion in it, could be, because it is a part of an epic, Mahabharata. So, being a part of an epic, it has some of the characteristics of that epic incorporated into it. The characters that you find in Gita, they belong to that epic only, Shri Krishna, Arjuna. They are the main characters in that epic also. Therefore, some elements of a culture are there in it. I won't say religion. Some elements of Hindu culture are found in it. But it is a universal message. It is applicable to all mankind of all times. That means the message transcends the limitations of time and space. It was taught some 5,500 years back, but it is applicable today as much as at the time of teaching. It is taught in some corner of the world, in the North India, in the northern part of India it was taught. So, but it is applicable to all human beings of the entire world. So, that is the glory of Gita. Gita is a psychological treatise. In fact, the psychology can be viewed in two ways. One, generally whatever psychology that people learn in universities and practice it, psychologists, psychiatrists, etc., they look at the psychology as a means of solving the human problem, the mind's problem. But the psychology of the psychiatry, they solve the problems in a very topical situation, very contextual. And the topical problems of the mind are addressed by the subject matter, by the branch of knowledge called psychology or psychiatry. Very topical. Whereas in Gita, all the human emotions that psychology looks at are discussed. Human frailties are of course addressed. Everything, entire psychology is brought about. But here, the human mind is analyzed and studied. And the problems of the human mind are addressed on a deeper perspective, the perspective of the essential reality of the human being itself. For from that standpoint we look at the human problems. Suppose you take the example of anger. Anger is the topic, subject matter. It is discussed in psychology texts and it is discussed in Gita also. In some corner of Gita you find a verse or two about anger also. But there is a big difference between these two analyses. In one, anger is analyzed from the point of view of its causes and how to address it, what kind of a disadvantage that comes to the person out of anger. That way it is a very topical way, in a very superficial way it is discussed. Whereas when it comes to Gita, why anger arises? Due to the lack of proper understanding of oneself. So from the point of view of self-knowledge, anger is discussed. Very fundamentally it is discussed. And its connection with the ignorance, the fundamental ignorance of the human being. Fundamental ignorance, not ignorance of the situation that is prevailing at a given moment. It's not topical that way. Very fundamental ignorance means you just do not know what you are. That kind of an ignorance. And that ignorance is responsible for many negative emotions that are there in our life. And anger is one of them. It is connected to desire also. This way, from a very deeper perspective, a simple emotion like anger is analyzed. Therefore, though it is a text of psychology, Gita excels all other treatises of psychology that are prevalent in the society. In fact, I can say that Bhagavad Gita is the greatest psychological treatise that was ever composed. I can say that. In fact, I was very pleasantly surprised to read a US author and philosopher, Thoreau. He says like this, just I am quoting, "In the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, since whose composition years have elapsed and in comparison with which our modern world and its literature seem puny and trivial." That is how he looks at Gita. And in the context of a US author, I remember, you see, there was one great saint of Massachusetts, that is Emerson. And Emerson, he met Carlyle in London in 17th century or 18th century, whenever. So Carlyle gave him the first copy of Bhagavad Gita that was printed in the Western world. That was the time of industrial revolution, printing press was discovered, and then a number of classical books were printed one after another, and the Bhagavad Gita was also recognized as a very classical text in Germany. And so some publisher in Germany published Gita, and Carlyle got hold of a copy, and Carlyle loaned it to Emerson, and Emerson studied Gita, and that was the beginning of the emerging of a saint out of a person. So Bhagavad Gita has got such a wonderful importance in the context of the development of Western philosophy also. Anyway, having said this much, now I will start discussing the verses that we have chosen for our study. As I already mentioned, these verses describe the definitive characteristics of a realized soul, a saintly person. And once again, here Shankaracharya is the master commentator on Gita. We call it Shankara Bhashyam. So generally when we teach Gita, we heavily rely upon Shankara's commentary or Bhashyam. As an introduction to these verses, Shankara makes a very pertinent point. He says, here the characteristics of a saint are described with a specific purpose in mind. The purpose is the seeker or the student is advised to emulate those characteristics. That is the purpose. So sadhanani upadishyante, that is what he says. In the case of a saint or a jnani, let us say jnani, a realized soul, a jnani. In the case of a jnani, these characteristics are natural to him. He has already achieved them as an intrinsic part of his personality. They are his own nature. So for that's why we call them sadhya. So they became, he has reached that height of that personality, and then he has assimilated those qualities, and now they are integral to him. They are part of his personality. As and when he exhibits those characteristics, they are spontaneous to him. They are not any more deliberate. So that is the stage he is in. But for a seeker, it is not like that. A seeker has to emulate these characteristics that he finds in a saintly person. So when we know that these are the characteristics that define a saint, then we will strive to acquire those qualities. That is the idea. It's not that a list of qualities are given and you keep that list on a piece of paper in your pocket, and whenever a supposed to be saintly person comes before you, you will compare and compare and contrast the person in terms of these characteristics, whether he has them or not. So that way, these characteristics could be used to judge a person. That is not the purpose. One should not try to use them in that way. That is the caution that Shankara has in mind when he says this. Otherwise, if you are a jnani, you need not be taught what are the characteristics of a jnani, because they are already yours. If you are an ajnani, if you are not a realized soul, then the information about the characteristics of a realized soul is not very relevant to you. So why they should be described at all? So this is the purpose. So they should be put to good use by understanding that a saintly person conducts himself in this fashion. So those qualities could be a kind of a goal for us. We can keep them as a goal, as an ideal before us, and we can strive to reach that ideal. That is the purpose. So yatna sadhyani, sadhanani, lakshanani. So this lakshana becomes a sadhana. That is what Shankara says. Lakshana means an attribute or a quality. But it becomes sadhana, means it becomes a means by which you conduct yourself to strive for a higher goal. So lakshana becomes means. For example, a jnani is there, a realized soul is there. He lives almost entirely desireless. That is the very first verse. So then desirelessness, which is a spontaneous character of a jnani, becomes a means to be adopted by us to reach that level. That is how lakshana becomes a sadhana. Lakshana means an attribute, becomes a sadhana, means a means for the seeker. So desirelessness is a means to reach the highest goal. Like that, that is how you have to look at them. Now, I suggest that instead of entirely depending upon a translation or an explanation, you may better relate to the verse also, because that way you can relate much better. So, a text-based approach for the subject matter is always superior in learning. So, I suggest you may say the verse with me. It starts like this. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Do you find it there? Is it mentioned that Shri Bhagavan Vacha is mentioned? Okay. Okay, if it is not there, you may assume it is there. Because it is an answer to Arjuna's question. Yeah, that may be missing, but it is there. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Because earlier verse was not Bhagavan's verse. It was Arjuna. It is something which was told by Arjuna. Now you may say the verse. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmanye vatmana tushtaha sthita prajnyaha tadochyate. So we are now trying to know what is sthita prajnyaha. Sthita prajnaha, the word I have already explained, but just I will remind you. So prajna is knowledge. Here it is the knowledge of the self, self-knowledge. That is prajna. So then sthita means stable, steady. The word steady, somehow it looks like sthita for me. It seems that it is derived from sthita. So anyway, a steady knowledge. ఏ పర్సన్ విత్ స్టడీ నాలెడ్జ్. ది నాలెడ్జ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ ది నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ ఫిజిక్స్ ఆర్ కెమిస్ట్రీ ఆర్ అనేది అదర్ సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్. ఇట్ ఈస్ ది నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ ద సెల్ఫ్, సెల్ఫ్ నాలెడ్జ్. వన్ హూ ఈజ్ స్టడీ ఇన్ సెల్ఫ్ నాలెడ్జ్. సో సచ్ దట్ ఈస్ ది గోల్ ఫర్ ఎనీబడి. సీ సపోజ్ యూ హియర్ దట్ నథింగ్ ఈజ్ ల్యాకింగ్ ఇన్ యూ, యు ఆర్ కంప్లీట్, యు ఆర్ పూర్ణం, యు ఆర్ ది హోల్. యూ హియర్ దిస్ స్టేట్మెంట్ ఆల్ ది టైమ్, బట్ ది మూమెంట్ యూ వండర్ అబౌట్ ఇట్, ఓ దిస్ ఈజ్ వెరీ నైస్ టు హియర్ దట్ ఐ ఆమ్ ద హోల్, వెరీ ప్లెజెంట్ స్టేట్మెంట్ టు హియర్. బట్ దెన్ వెన్ యూ క్రాస్ ది డోర్ అండ్ గో టు ది అదర్ సైడ్, యూ డోంట్ ఫీల్ దట్ వే, అండ్ హెన్స్ యూ డోంట్ బిహేవ్ ఆల్సో దట్ వే. సో ఇట్ ఈస్ యాజ్ సింపుల్ యాజ్ దట్. సో దట్ ఐ ఆమ్ ది హోల్ ఈజ్ ది ప్రజ్ఞ, దట్ ఈస్ ది నాలెడ్జ్ అబౌట్ మై సెల్ఫ్. బట్ డూ ఐ అబైడ్ ఇన్ ఇట్, దట్ ఈస్ ది పాయింట్. ఇఫ్ ఐ అబైడ్ ఇన్ ఇట్ దెన్ వాట్ హ్యాపన్స్, యు నో, ఎవ్రీ యాక్ట్ దట్ ఐ అండర్టేక్ ఈజ్ ఇన్ఫ్లుయెన్స్డ్ బై దిస్ నాలెడ్జ్. అదర్వైజ్ యూ కెనాట్ సే ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఏ స్టడీ నాలెడ్జ్. ఇట్ ఈజ్ లైక్ సపోజ్ ఎ చైల్డ్ ఈజ్ దేర్, ది చైల్డ్ డస్ నాట్ నో దట్ ది ఫైర్ బర్న్స్, ఇట్ డజంట్ నో. ఇట్ ఈజ్ అట్రాక్టెడ్ బై ద బ్యూటీ ఆఫ్ ది ఫైర్. సో ఎ ల్యాంప్ ఆర్ వాట్ ఎవర్, ఫైర్ ఈజ్ వెరీ బ్యూటిఫుల్ అండ్ అట్రాక్టివ్. ఇట్ లుక్స్ లైక్ ఎ నైస్ ఆరెంజ్ కలర్డ్ ఫ్రూట్. ఇట్ లుక్స్ లైక్ దాట్ టు ది చైల్డ్. They say it looks like that for the locust, so that's why the locust goes and jumps into it. A locust or a moth. But for the, let us take the example of the child. The child appear, it appears to the child as a very attractive something. So now you go and tell the child, you don't touch it, it will burn your finger. Suppose you tell the child, and as long as you are around, the child obeys your word. But you move away from there, the child wants to see what happens by touching the fire. That is the human mind functions like that. If you want the people to go to a particular movie, what all you have to do is just put a ban on it. Then all people will go to that. Salman Rushdie's book was banned and everybody read it. It was available freely. If you don't ban it, nobody would have noticed it. But just by banning it, everybody read it. So this is how human mind, probably it is there in a the forbidden fruit from very beginning, it is there as though it is there as a part of human psyche. So if something is forbidden, we want to go for it. Anyway, now the child was told, you don't touch the fire, it will burn your finger. The mother moves away and the child goes and touches it and its finger is burnt. Now the child knows, and that knowledge will stay with the child the entire lifetime. The child will keep a distance from the flame, and if there is a possibility of coming into contact with the flame, the person will strive his level best to avoid that contact, because he knows. Therefore, knowing is acting. You know, that is enough. People ask, suppose I know, then what happens? That is not the issue at all. Seeing is acting. You see that the fire burns, then I need not come behind you to tell you that you take care not to touch the fire. Like that, I need not give a warning to you. You will do it automatically. It becomes a part of our personality that we spontaneously keep a distance from the fire. That happens very spontaneous with our life, because we know it. This is what is called sthita prajna. So similarly, if I know my true nature, then the question of projecting a desire just does not arise. That is what he is saying. Prajahati yada kaman. Yada means in whichever time during his life, he keeps desires away. Prajahati means keeps them away. He just rejects them totally. Prajahati is rejecting. Totally he rejects. Kaman means desires, a desire. You see, when I say this, people get, I know, some people are afraid to hear that. What do you mean? Should we relinquish all desires? Then how to live? That way, people, they are a bit aghast at the idea itself. I suggest that you don't look at it like that. Just look at the statement. It's a challenging statement. You see, there must be a courage to make such statements even. So, just take it as a challenge and see what it means. What is the significance of that statement? Because he is, Sri Krishna is telling you relinquish desires. He is putting enough emphasis upon it to the extent that he says, you totally relinquish pra, totally relinquish all desires. That is what he says. All desires. It's not that you keep some of them and dump some of them. It's not like that. You just reject all desires. You see, the same statement is found in the Upanishads. In fact, Bhagavad Gita is considered to be the quintessence of the Upanishadic knowledge. That is how it is understood. That's why at the end of every chapter, we say, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su. So every verse of Bhagavad Gita is considered to be an Upanishad. In fact, this verse can be called Sarva Kama Tyago Upanishad. We can call it like that. Every verse is considered an Upanishad. So here Sri Krishna advises Arjuna, he addresses him as Partha. Partha means, O son of Pritha, the Kunti. So, when the person has the courage to totally relinquish all desires, then he becomes Sthita Prajna, a person of steady self-knowledge. That means a jnani. Then he becomes that. You see, even to appreciate the meaning of that statement, we should know what is this desire, how it originates, what is wrong with it. Something must be wrong with the desire. So that's why it is advised that you just relinquish it. What is wrong with it? You see, when we say you reject all the desires, we do not mean that you don't take a cup of coffee or you don't eat a particular dish. That is not the idea. The desiring attitude, the tendency to desire and desire and desire and go on desiring till the end of life, that is bad. What you enjoy is not that much important. It may be important in a different context, but the attitude of desiring is something very bad. And that is really what is wrong with us in life. So, we have to look at it that way. You see, Shankara, he defined the samsara. Samsara means the relentless cycle of pleasure and pain that we call life. That is what is called samsara. So, you ask anybody, are you comfortable? He cannot say, yes, I am totally comfortable for all the time. He cannot say that. At the best, he can say, I am comfortable now. And that now, it may extend for 5 minutes or at the best half an hour or 1 hour. Then he straight away becomes uncomfortable. So somehow, we are not at peace with the society. We are not at peace with Ishvara. We are not at peace with the family and also with ourselves. There is an agitation in the mind all the time. And then we suffer from this agitation, hyperactivity of the mind. And that's why people want to do meditation, because it is suggested that meditation will help you to overcome the problem of mind. Mind presents too many problems for us, and meditation offers a solution. Then people flock to meditation centers and they try to practice meditation. But this meditation is such a thing, it is a frustrating effort all the time. It is a back and forth effort. I see in various contexts, in the books also. So one gentleman went to a Mahatma and asked a question. Sir, I am practicing meditation since the last 25 years, but still my mind is not stable. What is wrong with me? That is what he asks. Everybody, somehow, all people who practice meditation, they have this complaint. Generally, some people may say it, some people may not say it. Their complaint is, we are trying to do meditation, but it just doesn't seem to work. The fact is otherwise. Your effort to do meditation, that itself is great, and it has a wonderful impact upon the lifestyle. It is a very nice thing to do. One should continue to do with meditation, continue to meditate in spite of the frustration. That is the advice. But still, this is the general experience, that 100 people sit and do meditation in all meditation centers. There are any number of meditation centers world over. And many people try to do meditation. But it is always a frustrating thing. It's a back and forth. This complaint is always there. Mind is not stable, it wanders away, and so I am unable to concentrate the mind. Why? What is the reason? The reason is because we have too many desires, and that is the basis of this hyperactivity of the mind. Therefore, this desiring attitude, we are stuck with it, and our mind, at every moment, it comes out with a set of desires. Like that, throughout the waking state, we go on desiring and desiring. In fact, what happened, I want, something else will come and join to that. I want is a phrase that is hanging in the mind all the time. Sometimes this I want blank, that blank is filled, a cup of coffee. And some other times it is filled a Mercedes-Benz car. Some other time it is filled by something else. Then it is filled by something else. So like that, sometimes it may be filled a trip to moon. So like that, anything can come and fill up that blank. But what comes into the blank, that is immaterial, but the phrase I want is with me all the time. In fact, if you look at it like this, we are all very anxious to go to sleep. If you make a phone call at night 10 o'clock to a friend, he may be annoyed by the phone call. In spite of being very good friend to you, he may be annoyed because it somehow disturbs his effort to go into sleep. Nobody likes to be disturbed at that time because everybody is anxious to go to sleep. Why? Why you should be anxious to go to sleep? When you have so many things that you love in this world, my beloved I love so much, the objects that I have procured and accumulated, I love all of them very much. I love my bank passbook, I love my protocol, my stock profile, etc. I love all these things. Why not continue to love that? Suppose I give you, a person is holding on to $1 million check. Why he's anxious to sleep? He has $1 million check in his hand. Andy Roddick has $1 million check in his hand. Why not he hold on to it by hugging it? Why he is anxious to go to sleep? I tell you, because we are fed up with this mind which is stuck with this I want. In fact, I have become a wanting person. All the time. What is it that I want that will be answered later? But essentially, I am a wanting person. Sometimes I may want a cup of coffee, which is a very very benign thing. And sometimes I may want a bigger thing, which may put me on all kinds of a long activity. Therefore, a human being, he should learn to come out of this trap of the mind. The mind traps the person into a psyche, a psychology, which stays with this person. I want. That's why, suppose he wants something, it is fulfilled. Then he wants something else, that is fulfilled. Then he wants something else, that is fulfilled. Now he is not sure what is it that he wants. And so then at that moment, you know what he says? He says, I am bored. And when he is bored, now he is sitting, he is bored. But that bored situation doesn't continue for long. Suddenly, he remembers something and the mind projects a desire. Now that boredom is gone because one more desire has come in. And now the wanting personality is in place. So, the wanting has become our inner nature, our second nature, or even you can even call it first nature, it has become like that. And this is the reason why our mind is so fickle, and even an effort to control it or to steady it, it doesn't work. That's why when a wanting person enters into meditation, meditation becomes difficult. Mind says something is waiting for you. When this meditation will come to an end? What next? How long I have to sit by closing the eyes? When can I open the eyes? So all these ideas will come to mind. Or simply, mind wanders away. It just wanders away. Without your permission, it goes away. And you will not know that it has gone away until the end of the meditation session. Or simply, if you persist with the mind and do not allow it to wander away, you will just go into sleep. You will have a nice nap for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then realize, oh my goodness, I slept. That means a mind which is so fickle with all its kinds of desires, that is the primary obstacle for concentration or meditation. And if you realize this fact and then strive towards a state of desirelessness, as you strive towards that state, you will regain the focus of the mind to that extent. To the extent you strive for desirelessness, to that extent your mind becomes less fickle. And finally, a person who lives a very noble yet very simple life has no problem in focusing the mind, because the mind automatically becomes less fickle and less fickle in its attitude. It is the endless stream of desires that make the mind hyperactive and make any concentration or meditation impossible. So this is how, in practical terms, the desires to be understood. So Shankara, I tried to mention it. So Shankara defined the samsara, the worldly life, the life of disorder, the life of conflict and struggle and discontent. So this life, he defined it as, we call it samsara. Just I am trying to give you the word samsara so that I can stay with that word in the next class. So this life of samsara, it is defined as avidya kama karma lakshana samsaraha. That is how he defines. Everybody is busy. Karma. Everybody is struggling, busy, running after. Everybody is running. Suppose you go and stand at an intersection. Then you can see when the green light comes, hundreds of people are running in this direction in their cars. And when this green light turns red and another green light comes, hundreds of people are running in the opposite direction in the cars. They are running in opposite directions apparently, but essentially they are running for the same purpose, namely to fulfill a desire. Some desire, they are running after a desire. So everybody is running. Running after what? After a pleasure. Running after pleasure. Or running to avoid a pain. Both are called desires only. Raga dvesha. So desire is twofold. Raga, I want to get this thing. That is a desire. Dvesha, I want to keep away from this thing. That is a dvesha. Like on a weekend, on a Friday evening, so all the cars will be leaving New York. And so that particular side of the 80 West is choked with cars. Because everybody wants to put a distance between himself and the workplace, or the place of residence even. They don't want to stay in the home also in the weekend. Home is a prison and workplace is a prison. So both of them are collectively left behind, and we want to run away from that. This is dvesha. They want to go to a resort or some such, it's a big business it is. The business people, they play on our likes and dislikes. So we dislike the home and we dislike the office, and so they present something other than the home and office and say, this is what you will like. So come to Caribbean, you will like it. So something like that. So they run towards that. Everybody is running away from, and everybody is running towards something. This is how the desire drives people, if I can say, crazy. So, you see, traveling in a car in this direction or in that direction, that is not the problem. Running behind something as a thing desired to gain it and then get fulfillment, that whole idea is wrong. The whole idea is wrong. Because, I tell you, you are not going to get fulfillment that way. No way. It's an endless road. You run after things for one day, 1 year, 100 years, you are not going to get fulfillment. It is an endless road. And then die here, and if you acquired a lot of virtue, if we are very virtuous, then go to heaven and pursue this road there. This road extends to the heaven. Till our virtue is exhausted and then come back. It's an endless road it is. It is like 80. Wherever you go, you find 80. Anyway, so it's an endless road in a way, relatively, I am telling. So, why I am running after things? That question one has to put. Why am I running after things? Because avidya, kama, karma. Karma is the running after. This running after is impelled by a kama, desire. Kama is a desire. It's not sex, it's a desire in general. So, why there is kama? Desire. Why do I desire a thing? What is the anatomy of a desire? The desire is like this. When I desire a flower, a very simple thing it is, but still, when I desire a flower, it means with it I am comfortable and fulfilled. Without it, I am lacking or I am wanting. That is the meaning of a desire. Otherwise, you don't desire a flower. For example, I do not feel that my table is somehow better by putting a flower. I never feel like that. That's why I don't keep a flower. Suppose I feel, some people put a flower to the buttonhole. Because by putting the flower to the buttonhole, I feel good about it. And without it, I must feel that something is lacking. Then only the impelling will be there. Then only the inspiration to take a flower and put in the buttonhole will be there. Therefore, in this running after is impelled by a desire. And the anatomy of the desire is, with the desired object, you are somehow fulfilled. You are full. Without it, you are nothing. That is the anatomy of the desire. Without analyzing the desire, we go on desiring. That's why there is a need to analyze. Now, that means what? I am empty. There is an emptiness within me. This emptiness, it comes out as a desire. Suppose I am full, there is no desire. There are moments in our life, experientially we have everything. Everything is with us. There are moments in our life when there is no desire. For example, I desire a Starbucks coffee. I desire it. Now somebody brought and put that coffee in my hand and I am sipping it. That first 5 or 10 sips, my mind has no desire. It is fulfilled. But after 10 sips, I desire a cookie to go with it. So that comes later. So initial first 10-15 sips, I don't have a desire. Because I am fulfilled. Therefore, a desire is nothing but an expression of an emptiness within. I am empty within. With this car, I will be fulfilled. With this dress, I will be fulfilled. With this companion, my beloved, I will be fulfilled. With the company of my friends, I will be fulfilled. With a movie, I will be fulfilled. So this is how the desire works. So there is an emptiness within me now. So every running after a pleasure, every desire is there because of the inner emptiness. Now the question is, you are trying to fill that emptiness by running after things. By running after desired things, we are trying to fill that emptiness. But the thing is, I request you to consider this, you are not going to fill that emptiness by fulfilling desires. Suppose I desire to become the President of the United States, most powerful position in the world, and then I become, that emptiness will continue to be there. Very interesting thing. A person, the other day I saw a tennis match. A person who gained $500,000 was crying. He was cursing his fate. He gained $500,000. Already it is in his pocket. And now he is crying. I could see the unhappiness in his face. Why he is unhappy? 1/10 of it would make anybody hilarious. Why he is unhappy? Because he already pocketed it. And now that doesn't mean anything to him. He wanted something else and that did not come his way. Just I am telling, sports people should be like that. I suppose I am not against a sport event, etc. I am just trying to find out how the desire works. So I am fulfilled. I am full. But a simple desire which arises from my bosom makes that fulfillment meaningless. That fulfillment has no meaning at all. It has no relevance at all. Once a desire is in place, suppose you assume that the desire is not there, you are fulfilled, you are full, and you are contented and you are happy and you are the whole. There is nothing wanting in you, there is nothing lacking in you, but all that reality is set at naught. It becomes meaningless once a small or big desire is projected. Therefore, desire is making you, he is depriving you of your true nature, which is fullness. That is what a desire is doing. Desire is very dangerous. It makes a millionaire, it converts a millionaire into a beggar. That is what a desire can do. So, a desire implies a wanting personality, an emptiness within. Now, okay, this emptiness is making me run behind the desired objects of the world, agreed. But then how to take care of that emptiness? If I stop running behind the pleasures, then what happens to that emptiness? Yeah, that emptiness is there in the first place more by habit. It is not there really. You are not really empty within. If you are really empty within, then nobody can save us. We have to run behind these things. You cannot remain empty within. You need fulfillment, and if it has to come from outside, if it were to come from outside, then we don't have any solution to this problem. We are going to remain like that forever. But fortunately, that is not the case. Fortunately, the emptiness which we so potently feel within ourselves is false. And how to know that? You examine your emptiness, then you will know that it is not emptiness. You have mistaken the fullness to be emptiness. How to examine that emptiness? First, you stop desiring. Yada prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha. First, you stop desiring and see. Don't think that the desireless state is a sterile state. Don't distrust desirelessness. Don't think that without desire, what kind of life it is. Don't think like that. I used to have a friend. I remember a small dialogue with him. He asked me, "Do you smoke?" "No." That's a long time back. Now he would not have asked me. So, "Do you smoke?" I said, "No." "Do you drink?" "No." "Do you snack?" "No." "Do you go to movies?" "No." He asked like this another 2-3 questions and then asked me, "What kind of a life it is?" That is what he asked me. So, the people suggest like that, without this fulfillment of this desire, without fulfilling that desire, life has no meaning. Like that they suggest, don't fall into that trap. Don't distrust desirelessness. Don't think that a desireless life is a sterile, meaningless life. No, don't think like that. It is the satisfaction of desires one after the other that breeds misery in our life. Because a desire fulfilled breeds half a dozen more desires. The desires are like bacteria. One bacterium, it multiplies into half a dozen. Like a chain reaction it is. You know chain reaction, nuclear chain reaction. So, one neutron is generated, it goes and impinges upon uranium atom. 3 న్యూట్రాన్స్ విల్ కమ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ఇట్ అండ్ 3 మోర్ యురేనియం ఆటమ్స్ ఆర్ ఇంపింజ్డ్ అండ్ దెన్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ చైన్ రియాక్షన్ ఇట్స్ జామెట్రికల్లీ ప్రోగ్రెసెస్ సో యూ హ్యావ్ వన్ డిజైర్ ఫుల్ఫిల్డ్ దేర్ ఆర్ హాఫ్ ఎ డజన్ డిజైర్స్ ఆల్రెడీ ఇన్ ప్లేస్ వన్ డిజైర్ ఫుల్ఫిల్డ్ ఆల్రెడీ దేర్ ఆర్ హాఫ్ ఎ డజన్ ఇన్ ప్లేస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఇఫ్ ఐ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ వెరీ సచ్ ఆబ్వియస్ థింగ్ ఇన్ అవర్ లైఫ్ దేర్ఫోర్ డోంట్ ట్రై టు ఫుల్ఫిల్ డిజైర్స్ ఇట్స్ ఎన్ ఎండ్లెస్ రోడ్ ట్రై దిస్ థింగ్ ది ఆపోజిట్ యూ జస్ట్ డ్రాప్ ఆల్ ది డిజైర్స్ అండ్ దెన్ యూ విల్ ఫీల్ ఎన్ ఎంప్టీనెస్ విత్ ఇన్ యూ బికాస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఎంప్టీనెస్ ఇన్ ది ఫస్ట్ ప్లేస్ విచ్ పుట్ అస్ బిహైండ్ దీస్ డిజైర్స్ సో యూ మే ఫీల్ దట్ ఎంప్టీనెస్ యూ స్టే విత్ దట్ ఎంప్టీనెస్ యూ ఎగ్జామిన్ దట్ ఎంప్టీనెస్ మనోగతాన్ బికాస్ all these desires are the projections of the mind they are not integral part of your self manogatam self the atma I use the word atma for the self self you know self means your essential truth your essential reality is self and in sanskrit we use the word atma so these three words you please hold on to them atma the self jnani One who has knowledge, jnanam is knowledge, knowledge of the self only in this context, and samsara is the world, the worldly life, a life given to worldliness, which is full of conflict and strife. That is what samsara is. So when I examine that emptiness, it becomes clear to you. That's why I told you. Like the child touches the flame and it now knows that that the flame burns, the fire burns. The same way, you examine the emptiness that you feel within you. Don't go by hearsay. Just you examine it yourself because it has to become your own truth. Otherwise, the desiring attitude will persist. So desiring means demanding, complaining, everything will follow, frustration. So it follows all these things come out of the desire only. So you examine that the so-called emptiness within you, you will notice that it is nothing but a projection of the mind, manogatan. It is not the fulfillment of a desire that makes you happy. Please note, it is not the fulfillment of a desire that makes you happy. It is only the contentment that makes you happy. So anyway, we will come to that. So, because keeping away from all desires and living in a contented fashion with what comes by itself is a very, very fruitful state. In fact, I can say to this extent, desirelessness is fullness. So, manogatan atmanye vatmana tushtaha, a very, very profound way of presenting the things. The desires are not located in yourself. They are located in the manaha, mind. Mind is the locus of desires, not the atma. Atmanya vatmana tushtaha. Atma is not the locus of desires. Atma is the source of fullness. And there is no happiness by fulfilling desires, because a desire fulfilled will breed half a dozen more desires, and a desiring person is always a wanting person. So there is no happiness in it. The happiness is there when you call the bluff of this mind, and when you understand that this stupid mind, stupid at the same time clever, presents all kinds of desires before us as though they are necessary for the fulfillment. So this is a trap. It's a groove that we fall into. In fact, any desire is a groove. Suppose you remember an object, it is a thought. As a thought, it won't hurt you. But the same thought persists and mind falls into that groove. Then it is a desire. And now you are no more comfortable. So, the desires are located in the mind. Manogatan, manaha is the locus. You develop a space between yourself and the mind. That means, you develop a space between yourself and the desire. Because mind is the desire at the moment of desiring. So there is no other desire other than mind. So at the moment of desiring, that desiring thought is the desire. Therefore you develop a space with reference to that. And you don't fall for it straight away. Don't hug it straight away. And you examine it and you question it, and then manogatan, you will develop that space, and then you will step back, as it were, into your own true nature, which is Atma, and there you will discover fullness. Atmanye vatmana tushtaha. You do this for a length of time, you are sthita prajna, and you are a man, you are liberated. So here, the shastras, yada sarve pramuchyante kama yasya hrithi shritaha, atham atyomruto bhavati, atra brahma samashnute, like that the Upanishad, Kathopanishad says, if only you can retain the state of desirelessness for a length of time, so that it becomes your own nature, then you are liberated, no one here. That is the promise. So, we'll come back in the next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Krishnarpanamastu.